Show. It's fantastic to have your company this Wednesday, the or Thursday, should I say? I'm already thinking about yesterday's show, this Thursday, the 6th of August. I'm your host, Lucy Zelich. It's so great to have you joining us here today. And it's a very welcome back to my co-host over at SDHQ, Nick Stoll, aka Stolich. Stolich, you were missed yesterday, but I'll tell you what, it's good to have you back, son.
It's good to be back, and I'm very excited to chat with two great guests and a lot of A-League content.
Wow, haven't we got a massive show lined up for today? Always plenty of talking points in the A-League, and I'm absolutely delighted to welcome along the great Neil Kilkenny joining us all the way from his hotel room in his hub, trapped with the Perth Glory side throughout this COVID-19 period. Killer, it's so great to see you, mate. How are you holding up?
Good, thanks. Thanks for having me on the show. Looking forward to the show.
Yeah, we've got plenty to talk through. And, you know, this man needs no introductions. For those of us in the media, we all know this man very, very well, but he is none other than the legendary Ray Gatt. Gatty, you know what? I said to you before we came on air before that you and I have disagreed over many, many things over the years, but one thing I've always respected and admired about you is that you are still a gentleman throughout it all and that we can continue to agree to disagree. You're a top guy. We were very sad to lose you from the journalism world, but you're still very active on Twitter, so it's almost as if you never left. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks, Lucy. How are you, Nick? I think you're a bit rough there. I don't think we've all disagreed on a whole lot of things, maybe one or two issues, Lucy, but yeah, no, still active on Twitter. You've got to keep the brain moving, and yeah, when you're involved in football for so long, you can't actually break away from it totally, so you've got to have some sort of connection. So no, it's enjoyable.
No, that's good to hear, Gatty, and we'll get to you shortly, but I want to cross over to you, Killer, and just sort of give us an insight into how things are going throughout this isolation period. It's just been a funny old season. It's been a funny old year. Everyone is feeling it at the moment, but how have you been taking everything in your stride?
It's been tough for everyone, I think, so, but we're really looking forward to the remaining games. So obviously, we've had three games now, and we got a good win the other night, so we're really looking forward to the next game.
And talk us through that win that you had, because prior to that, I mean, it was a really rough result against Adelaide, and I'm sure that Popper would have been absolutely cooking, especially given how many goals you popped and how defensively sound a Tony Popovich team ordinarily is. But the match against Western Sydney as well, I mean, that was a very important result for you guys.
Massive result for us. We played really well. I felt something against Wellington. Well, we dominated the game possession-wise, but individual mistakes, you know, and obviously Adelaide wasn't a very good performance from everyone at the club. So we needed to put a performance out, and luckily we did. Next game.
Here we go. Who just got a call?
Sorry, that was me.
Liz, what's going on?
I just got some grief from everyone about, you know, you keep getting all these text messages when we're on air, can you turn that off? And then I said, yeah, no worries, I'll do my best. And then my phone started ringing. Sorry, everybody. I'll call the cake lady back. But I want to sort of address that whole period with you, Killer, leading up to the season actually resuming and what it was like being in that lockdown period. I know it varied from player to player. A lot of players saying that, you know, they didn't really kick a ball, they weren't focusing too much on the football side of things. But what were you doing during that period?
I was looking after the kids. I obviously got three young children, but I was, again, like a 11-year-old, 12-year-old boy going down to the park every day for a couple of hours, kicking the ball against the wall, trying to keep my fitness because we knew that the league was going to come back. And when it come back, we needed to be ready. So, you know, you have to put your professional head on and make sure you're ready to go. And that's what I did. Like I said, I was like a young kid again, and it took me back to the day. Took my little boy down there, and he took more of an interest in football too. So, and I can see now he's taken a bit more interest because he sees what Dad does every day. So, yeah, it was a good time to spend some time with the family as well.
Stolich, some questions for Killer?
Yeah, I just wanted to ask what it's like working with someone like Nick D'Agostino. You know, he's an exciting young player from an Aussie perspective, but, you know, Popovich has been a bit critical of him as well on the other hand. So what's it like, what's he like, you know, in training and stuff like that? What can we expect from him in the coming years?
Yeah, Nick's definitely got a lot of potential. You know, we've seen that over moments throughout his young career. But obviously, he needs to put them moments together more often. He's definitely got the ability, and you know, with experience, he'll get that. But hopefully, you know, he can keep progressing, keep training hard, and keep looking after himself. And if he does that and takes on the advice that the management give him, you know, he'll go a long way in the game.
Gaddy, over to you. Some questions.
Neil, what was the feeling like when it was announced that Diego Castro wasn't coming back? And how did the players feel when you see stuff like, Perth aren't the same team without Diego? Yeah, how did the players react to that?
Listen, we know that Diego's a good player. We know that. We knew that there was a possibility that he might make that decision, and that was his decision. All the players ready to go. But I obviously, last season, he didn't play a vast majority of the games. A lot of people haven't really looked into that situation, in the sense of I think he missed a lot of games at the start of the last season, and we went on an incredible run, and he come back in the team as well, and he come into a team that was winning a lot of games. So we know he's a good player. Like I said, we've always welcomed good players at the club, but if a player doesn't want to, obviously, you know, he doesn't want to come for health reasons, that's a decision. But we've got to move on, and we've got to look forward to the next couple of games, and hopefully, you know, hopefully we can put now a run together and go into the finals with a few wins under our belt.
Couple of questions coming in from our fans here today, and I want to make mention to all of them tuning in here. It's fabulous to have your company. Of course, you know, we are coming to you live on Wednesdays and Thursdays for our dedicated A-League program, so it's great to have your company. Michael Ong, one of our regular guests here on both Wednesdays and Thursdays. Michael, great to have your company, mate. Thanks for your question. Kilkenny, how did you celebrate Leeds' promotion to the Premier League?
I obviously didn't celebrate because I was here, but we were all talking about it here in the hotel. But it's fantastic for the club. It's a club that should be in the Premier League with the fan base, and now they're, you know, they're luckily back in there, and it's fantastic to see them all back in the club back in there, because like I said, I really enjoyed my time there, and you know, hopefully one day I'll be back there in a different aspect.
Matt McGee also wants to know, how good was your time at Leeds, Neil?
Sorry, say that again, Lucy. I didn't hear that.
Matt McGee has also written in and asked, how good was your time at Leeds?
Well, yeah, no, it was a fantastic time. I really enjoyed it. You know, looking back now, the club was actually bigger than I thought till I walked through the doors, and then everywhere I went, even when I come back to Australia, I had Leeds fans recognising me. So it was probably one of the highlights of my career so far to play for such a massive club.
You said you'd like to end up back there in some capacity. Does that mean that coaching is something that you're considering down the line after you finish up playing?
100%. It's something that I've, from probably the age of 24, that I've got a real passion of trying to, you know, help the game progress, especially in this country. And I've got ambitions to go into coaching and management when I finish my career. But if I look after my body, hopefully I've got plenty more years to come. And that's what I'm focused on now, to carry on playing as long as I can. And then obviously after 100%, I want to definitely go into coaching.
Before I hand back over to Stoppage, you know, I've always been such a big fan of yours. From the moment you stepped foot on the pitches here in the A-League, I think you have so much to offer. You're such a quality footballer, but you're a top guy off the park as well. I think everyone can agree with me when I say that I was really shocked with the situation that unfolded under Warren Joyce whilst you were with Melbourne City. I think a lot of City fans still very gutted that you left. But obviously, much to the delight of Perth Glory fans, because you've been such a star for them once again, that's no surprise, of course. But can you give us some insight into just what happened at City Kia and why that all went south? Because from the outside looking in, it seemed as though just things had soured between you and Joyce, but we never really knew what happened there.
I really enjoyed my time at Melbourne City. I loved it there. But that's what happens. Managers come in, they've got a different way of thinking. He had very old school, probably English way of thinking the way the game should be played. And I wasn't probably the only player that, you know, he really didn't take a fancy to, which is, you know, fine. That's football. You have to move on. There was quite a lot of us, probably about six or seven of the more experienced players. But yeah, it was a tough time because my family was settled there. The reason why I come back to Australia to play was because I wanted to play at a certain brand of football, which Melbourne City sold to me. So it was disappointing, but I've come to Perth and I really enjoy it. My family have settled really well and we're playing a really good brand of football here as well. One of the reasons why I left England at 30 was because I had enough of second balls and putting the ball in the channel and things like that. I wanted to play in teams that wanted to play through the thirds. I was lucky enough to do that at Melbourne City, and maybe they went against that to a certain extent when, you know, the second year that I was there when Ryan Joyce come in. But now I'm here at Perth. We're playing through the thirds under Tony Popovich, and he's a fantastic manager. And I've really enjoyed working under him. And I want to go into coaching, but I've learned a lot under him. And I'm taking a lot on board off the pitch as well as on it.
Village?
Yeah, we really appreciate everyone writing in. We especially appreciate when A-League players write in, including your teammates. Alex Grant, 94, asks, did you get your room cleaned? Me and Rocket are still waiting on ours.
While we're in the hub, we only get our room cleaned twice a week. But I had mine cleaned yesterday, guys. But
Looking very nice.
Oh, cheers. It's up to the responsibility of the person in the room to look after the room as well. So, it's up to them to look after the room. I look after my room. As you can see, my bed's nicely made. I do that every morning, and that's one of my routines at home, and I've carried that on here.
Would you suggest that Alex maybe doesn't keep the same cleanliness standards that you do?
Oh, no, it's his decision. I'm not saying that. I haven't really been in their room that much, but that's his decision. If he wants his bed made, maybe he should make it himself.
Danny, some questions for Killer before we let him go shortly?
Very quickly, you mentioned Tony Popovich. You've played under a lot of managers over in England. You know, where does he rate? And could he coach overseas, obviously?
100%, yeah. Fantastic manager. Very hard on the players, very demanding, but it's good. But realistic with it, you know. Expects a lot from you because he has a lot of confidence in his players. And I've really enjoyed it because I feel as though, every day on training, you have to be training properly. There's no mucking about, which I like. As soon as you step over that white line, whether it's training or games, you have to go out there and train and play properly. I come across in maybe a certain perception on the TV or on the pitch, but that's when I walk over the white line, I want to win. I've got that mentality, and he certainly got that. But I'm a different person on it, off it, and I think he is as well. He's a great person. Really caring for his players and looks out for his players. So I've really enjoyed working under him, and hopefully I can continue for a long time yet.
What are you feeling about coming into the final series now, Killer? What the obvious ambitions are, because I expected, to be honest, and this is me being very frank, I expected Perth to be a lot stronger this season, especially off the back of the last campaign. But how do you think you go in the finals, and where do you expect to cause some real damage?
Well, I think we'll be organised as as you see, the manager sets us up really well and strong. We were disappointed to not win the final last year, and we've been disappointed, obviously, against Adelaide this year in the last couple of games. But hopefully, like I said, now we can put some runs together, results together, and hopefully we can go all the way to the final. We want to win it, and hopefully we can do so.
So your final two games and Western United, I mean, realistically, that's a solid run in given the form that Victory have been in and Western United very up and down. But who do you think your biggest rivals will be coming into the final series?
Well, I think obviously Sydney have been the best team, obviously consistently, probably three of the last 4 years. I felt we were by quite far last season the best team football wise, but yeah, no, definitely you can't look past Sydney in the sense of no matter what, this season they've been brilliant, they've been consistently the best team. So, but yeah, there's Melbourne City have put on, they've been well organized, play some really good football as well, so they'll be up there. But we're really looking forward to it. We respect them, but you know, we're going into the game when we do play them to expect to beat them, and hopefully we can do.
Stolich, some final questions for before letting go.
Yeah, Neil, someone has written in and has asked, can you ask Neil if he has forgiven Graham Arnold after he treated him in the Ollie Roos? I actually didn't know that there was an issue there. Could you expand on that, or?
Yeah, no, of course, you know, he's done really well in his management career, yeah, I obviously went to the Olympics. I was disappointed not to play that more game time than I did. And I got asked a question, and I answered the question honestly, if I'm honest. And, you know, maybe that's been held against me over the years, but he's a fantastic manager, and we speak now. I spoke to him, congratulated him many times when he was done a fantastic job for Sydney FC. Obviously, making them such a strong team, a well-oiled machine. So, so obviously we speak. I've got great respect for him, and fair play to him. And he's doing quite a good job at, with the Australian national team too now. So, yeah.
Well, there you go. That clears that one up. You are a star. It's just been a real pleasure to catch up with you during what's been, as I said, a really strange period for everyone across Australian football. We wish you all the very best with Perth in your final games coming up to the final series, and we hope that we can wrap up the competition expediently, and we look forward to seeing more of you on the park, mate. Thank you so much for making the time today.
Thanks, Neil. Appreciate it.
Good luck, Neil. Good luck.
Yes, big thanks to Killer there, and thank you to everybody writing your questions in. It's great to have your company. As I said, joining us here is another special guest, and that's the legendary Ray Gatt. Gatty, it's over to you now. It's all about you. We said earlier that it's been great to see that you're still active across Twitter, but has it been strange in retirement? I mean, moving away from the journalistic scene, what have you been doing with your time, and does it feel quite surreal to be, I guess, on the periphery now?
Yeah, it is a little strange. I've got to admit, but also I've got to admit, unfortunately, I'm not missing journalism, to be honest. So I'm actually enjoying sitting down and watching a game and not having to worry about filing on deadline. You know, the score's 0-0, 5 minutes to go, and you know, you might have to change your story if someone scores a goal, and you know, there's 2 minutes to deadline. So you know, I certainly don't miss that aspect of it. I do miss probably the day-to-day interacting with players and coaches and media friends, you know, like you guys and whatever. But, you know, it is what it is. I mean, I am enjoying retirement, I've got to admit. You know, I've done my time, I think 47 years as a journo, yeah, is a pretty good inning. So, yeah, it's time to relax and enjoy.
Pretty good is putting it mildly. I mean, 47 years, that is an incredible spell. Can you run us through some of the highlights for you, Gatty? I mean, I'm sure there'd be many. What really stood out to you?
Oh, Lucy, so many. Look, I think probably one of the first highlights is, I wasn't actually writing about football at the time. It was 1974, the soccer is making the World Cup final there, you know, and watching in 1973, Jimmy Mackay score that fantastic goal against South Korea that got us into the World Cup for the first time ever. You know, that will always stand out for me. And then, you know, later on getting to meet Rally Rasic and actually to become very, very good friends with him, and, you know, just and through extension becoming friends with a lot of the 74 Socceroos who regard me as a little bit of family, which, you know, I'm very proud of. So, yeah, that's probably been the biggest highlight for me. And obviously 2006, you know, going to Germany and covering my first World Cup with the Socceroos, that was brilliant. That will stand out. But, yeah, so many good memories. Getting to interview some fantastic people like, you know, Kevin Keegan, Pelé stands out. I interviewed him a couple of times, and Sir Alex Ferguson and George Best, and you know, the list is endless, and you know, that sort of stuff will stay with me.
What about the lowlights before I throw over to Stolich for some questions? I mean, what are some of the things that you kind of shake your head and you think, oh man, I wish I wasn't a part of that time in Australian football?
Look, probably that Senate inquiry in the early 90s, that wasn't a good time for the game. But, yeah, maybe some of the riots we saw, you know, that didn't stand out. But probably the worst thing is that, you know, as a game, we take a step forward and then three steps back. And, you know, as a football community, we've never been united, never been together as one. And, you know, I long for the days when we can all be on the same page, sing from the same hymn book, and, you know, just enjoy the game, and you know, not have football politics and egos and self-interest, you know, infiltrate the sport. You know, just, yeah, that's probably the thing I hate most about it.
Yeah, Gaddy, obviously you're kind of a legend of football media. I wondered, you know, right now there's a lot of changes in the air, you know, people losing their job, some people moving on by their own choice. You know, there's talk of creating, you know, an A-League Netflix-style thing. Big, big changes in football media. I wondered what your thoughts have been on all that as someone who's kind of seen it all over the years, and where you think the future's going to be, and any advice you might have for some younger journos coming through.
Yeah, look, Nick, it's a very, very tough time, isn't it? The last 12 months, I mean, even longer. We lost Mike Cockerell, the late Mike Cockerell, obviously. Yeah, that was a huge loss for journalism, or football journalism in this country. And then, you know, obviously I retired, and then there was all the redundancies at News Limited. So that, you know, that's made it very, very hard for the sport. And I do have fears in terms of the football coverage. It's still good that there are guys like Mick Lynch and Vince Ruggieri and Don Bossi and young guy called Joe Barton at News, and Marco Monteverdi is still around, so they're still carrying the flag. And, I do worry about where we're heading football coverage-wise. I do hope it picks up. I do like the idea of, you know, the game taking hold of its own media rights into, you know, and getting the message out there through their own sources. You know, that, as you say, Netflix-type style of thing, which would be great. There's obviously a lot of good young talented journos out there as well. You know, I've had contact with a lot of them. But yeah, I'm humble too that a lot of them contact me and ask for advice and whatever. And I'm always happy to give that. So, you know, if there's anyone out there who wants to reach out, I'm more than happy to give that advice. Yeah. I might be a bit firm in the fact that I say that maybe they should try and choose another career path than journalism, because yeah, it's a tough gig. But I'm also one that would never, ever, you know, tell someone not to follow their dream. So if they want to follow football journalism, then go for it. And I'm around if they want some help.
Oh, that's great advice, Gaddy. Nadia D. Tenace, one of our regular fans here on our World Game Lives across both the Wednesday and Thursday shows. Great to have your company once again, Nadia. She said, I'd love to watch your interviews in a best of Gaddy. Who did you feel was probably, you know, right up there in terms of a compelling interview and a great chat?
Oh, that's a hard one. Look, I really enjoyed interviewing Pelé. I thought that, yeah, because he was one of my football heroes. So, yeah, me watching him play was unbelievable. So yeah, he would be one. Look, Steven Gerrard, obviously being a Liverpool fan, Lucy, I mean, he was something different when they came out here. I had 4 minutes with him, but it was a great 4 minutes. I had the Liverpool media guy looking over my shoulder and saying, you've only got 4 minutes, and you count 1 minute, 2 minutes. You've only got 2 minutes left. So, you know, and you're trying to get in as many questions as you can. But, yeah, look, Kevin Keegan's brilliant. George Best, that was a really enjoyable interview with him. He came out here several times and actually played out here. So, oh, look, there's so many to rattle off.
One topic of conversation, I mean, we've spoken about the whole host of changes that we're seeing throughout Australian football and are probably still yet to see, but it's something that you and I disagree on, Gaddy, and I'd love to get into this particular talking point, and it's about the potential switch to winter. You're pretty firm in your stance on it, and you'd think it basically would represent the death of the sport. And I know that a lot of people have shared that view. In fact, I used to be on your side of the fence. And that was some months ago, but I had a real change of heart because I thought, you know, what have we got to lose in Australia now? And for me, I think one of the key sticking points in this argument is basically that we need to align the game. We need to start strengthening our relationships with the Asian Football Confederation. We need football in Australia to be aligned. That's where my view has always come from. And I'm a big fan of, you know, seeing the players who are thoroughly enjoying playing throughout this winter period and the quality of football that it's produced. But you are against the idea. Tell us why.
Yeah. Lucy, firstly, I'll say I wouldn't think it'd be the death of the game because our game is so resolute and, you know, we've had so many bad times and we've always survived and we will survive in the future and hopefully it'll get stronger. But, yeah, look, I was around when we had winter football and to me it was just, it just didn't work. You know, the grounds, the level of the grounds, having to compete against other codes as well. It's a really, really tough call. Summer football to me has been terrific, and we weren't complaining about the standard of football or summer football a few years ago when the crowds were great. I mean, we got 62,000 at a Sydney Derby, a record crowd for an A-League game in the middle of summer.
But in the evening, Daddy, that was played in the evening time when, you know, you've got a bit of a dip in temperature.
I agree with that point, and I'll preface this by saying that any summer football, there should be no games played up before 7 o'clock. And I think that would help. But I mean, you know, this issue about, you know, we'll get a better standard of football, I don't know about that. We'll be sharing grounds with other sports. Bankwest Stadium, I mean, they'll have rugby league, and we'll have soccer there as well. And, you know, Jubilee Stadium, the new Sydney Football Stadium. We've got to share it with other codes in the middle of winter. Imagine if we have a bad winter. And also, look, I'm doing this for selfish reasons too. I prefer to be at a game in shorts, with a beer in one hand and a pie in the other hand, and not worried about getting wet and getting cold or getting pneumonia.
Oh, you're a bogan, aren't you? That's why we love you, Gaddy.
Well, tell me who doesn't love that. I mean, also the other issue is, I get that we've got to align with all everything, you know, grassroots all the way up, Asian football. Let's not forget, Saturday morning, parents have got two or three kids are playing all different sports, you know, netball, basketball, soccer, whatever. Their mornings will be taken up, taking their kids everywhere, doing football, you know, it'll be cold. Then, you know, they've got to get home and maybe get ready and go to a game. You know, it's a very long day for them as well. So, look, I can see where everyone's coming from and I can understand it, but give me summer football anytime.
George Marchetti writing in via Facebook. Great to have your company, George. Thanks for writing in. He said, I agree totally with you, Gaddy. The A-League is a vibrant league and spring/summer/autumn is best for reasons Gat has just mentioned. It's a con to say that football has to be aligned just to get a second division. No thanks. Have more evening games. I guess
I must buy George a beer.
Yeah, with your meat pie and your thong and shorts.
Yeah, that's right. We'll sit together. I'll shout him all night if he wants.
I mean, I think we do have to be aligned. I don't necessarily think it is a con. I think that's been one of the greatest crimes, I guess, in Australian football, Gaddy, and I'll pose this to you also, Stolich, to get your views, is that we are so fractured as a game when it comes to our opinions, when it comes to our competitions, and the fact that we, you know, we really are missing opportunities to, when we think down the path about, okay, days, we are looking to establish the National Second Division. How do we expect that to work? Will that align with just the A-League, or do we want that to align with all of the pathways? I think that's been one of my issues, is that we're not creating a streamlined process to be able to allow for players to aspire to go from the next level, you know, looking up, and have it be in a fluid and consistent sort of system. I think that's one of the issues that I have, Gaddy. But also, Stolich, what are your views?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are some definite good points that Gaddy raises. And that's the thing. I think with summer, you're going to have trade-offs. With winter, you're going to have trade-offs. And you're right about, like, pitch availability. That's going to be a big thing. But then if you think about summer, the pitches, because it's so hot and dry, they can be quite hard. And, you know, you can have quite poor games because of the conditions. So wherever we play, there's always going to be trade-offs, and there's always going to be good games and bad games in summer, in winter. So we kind of be careful thinking that either one is going to be a silver bullet. But yeah, I think it's a good point that you raise as well, Lucy, about the fact that, you know, the alignment. I think not only do you want to create a second division, you want to create a full pyramid so that someone can get from a regional division to the second division, of course, because then you're going to have the same complaints about the teams that are in the second division. So it's something that we have to look at. But I think the early signs of winter football, if you talk to a lot of the players, they seem to prefer it. It's hard to gauge whether the fans prefer it yet, because we haven't really been able to attend in any great numbers. So that will be interesting to see with crowds and also TV ratings and you know, stream ratings and all that kind of stuff. We'll have to kind of have a bigger sample to say whether it's been a success or not. But so far, I've really liked the A-League being in winter. I feel like the games have been of a higher quality. I don't know, you know, we don't really have data to back that up yet. There's no data on whether, you know, players have been able to run more or late goals and late chances and all that kind of stuff. But I've really enjoyed it. I've also really enjoyed games being on every night. You know, it's nice to know that you can just flick it on and start. And I think that's something, for example, that the Big Bash had in summer. There was a model of success was that every night cricket fans knew they could just turn on the TV. There would be a Big Bash game. They didn't necessarily know who was playing, but they just knew they were going to get, you know, entertainment. And that's what I think the A-League can do as well.
Yeah, Nick, in terms of the quality of the football, I agree with you. It's been terrific, but I just wonder how much of a factor it is that, you know, the players are out for so long, so now that they've come back and they're going to play in a six-week period, so they're just throwing everything they can into just this six-week period. So, you know, they're happy to be playing football again. How would it be in the grind of a, you know, 30-game season? You know, how would the standard be? The grind of a 30-game season in the middle of winter, you know, that's what I'd like to know.
It's a good question. And I guess this is the thing. We're never really going to know until we do it. And then, you know, I'd be very interested to know from FFA's point of view or the A-League club's point of view, what are their measures of success if we move to winter? What kind of crowds are they expecting? Yep. What kind of pitch quality are they expecting? It's going to be very interesting. But, you know, yep. I'd be interested to see what the fans say as well.
Yeah, one last thing. In terms of winter, the one concession I would make in the way I feel is that, in terms of the second division, which would then bring promotion and relegation, you know, if it's to make a success of the second division, allow us second division to work and function properly, then maybe I'd be, you know, I could make a concession in that regard for winter football, because we absolutely need a second division and we certainly need promotion and relegation.
I think when it comes to pick up on your earlier points about the grind of a winter competition, I mean, I think the grind of a summer competition is far more taxing on a player's body, their recovery. You know, I mean, how many times, Gaddy, we've seen games, and a lot of this comes down to broadcast rights, as you'd know very well. They're very reluctant to reschedule matches because of, you know, their existing contract agreements, but also the content slate that they have on that particular day and time. You know, so many Perth matches as well, scheduled earlier on in the day, unfortunately. And you've got players competing in 40-degree heat. I mean, I've spoken to many of them over the years, as I'm sure you would have. Yep. And some of them have conceded to me that they've been vomiting excessively, they've been unwell, they've lost a lot of weight, because it really is taxing to compete in conditions like this for any athlete. It doesn't matter how fit you are. That's one of the concerns that I have around it. So many valid points for both arguments, whichever side of the fence that you do sit on when it comes to this. But I'm at the point where I've realised I think something needs to change. And when it comes to stadia availability and the quality of the pitches, that obviously has to come first and foremost, because we want quality playing surfaces for our players that are also, you know, going to be suitable for their welfare. But I wonder if potentially moving away from these big stadiums could be something that we look to do. I know that Sydney Football Stadium, of course, is being reconstructed at the moment, but what a success it's been to see them playing at Jubilee. I think, in my opinion, I think it's actually been better quality than what it would have been at the old football stadium, right? Could we see ourselves in a situation where we just move away from these big stadiums and test out smaller stadiums across the country?
Look, that'd be terrific if it did happen, Lucy. I don't know whether it's possible. I mean, obviously Sydney, I think, would be tied into a contract with the new Sydney Football Stadium. So, you know, but I agree. Yeah, you know, watching those games at Jubilee Oval have been fantastic. And the smaller grounds, I mean, you know, the atmosphere is a lot better. I think the fans enjoy it. They should. I mean, you look at rugby league, the West Tigers, and they play at Leichhardt Oval. They pack it out. You know, the fans love it there. Even though there's no parking, the facilities are terrible, but they enjoy the match day atmosphere, being close to the players, and just the atmosphere in the surrounds of a ground like Leichhardt. But, hopefully one day we can get to that, Lucy. But I don't know how many grounds are suitable for it, to be honest.
I want to get your overall impressions, Gaddy, as we look to move on to the next topic about Football Federation Australia in general. You know, this December it will mark 2 years since the new board came into effect, and they've made some pretty hasty and big decisions whilst they've been in those positions. But I'd love to know what your overall sort of adjudication has been of them.
Yeah, look, it's been a tough one for them, hasn't it? Huge transition following the Lowy era. We all called for a change, didn't we? And we got it. And obviously, the Lowy's and said, yeah, careful what you wish for. But you know, it's been a tough time for them coming in, especially now with COVID and how they've had to handle this and the Independent A-League, where we're going to head with that. I really feel sorry for someone like James Johnson having to walk into this and the troubles with Australian football and all the competing, factions around the game. You know, it's a tough call for him. If I had to give him, a percentage of or a pass mark, I'd probably give him 60 out of 100, I would think.
What did you think of the expansion licences that were awarded to MacArthur and also to Western United? I mean, we're yet to see MacArthur with the ball, but what's your view on those decisions?
Yeah, interesting ones, to be honest. I mean, the Southern Expansion did put out a compelling case. I felt sorry for them. Team 11 as well, they put out a great case. Obviously, we don't know the full reasons why those two were given their licences. The jury's still out, obviously, on Western United. Hopefully, they'll get their home ground built. Don't know where they are at with that. MacArthur, I think, will be a success, to be honest. I live out in the area, up near Liverpool, and I know just how big that area is and how much bigger it's going to get. And I think there's certainly enough room for, two clubs like Western Sydney and MacArthur, because MacArthur can stretch way, way down further. So, and they'll have a huge catchment area. So I'm excited to see what they're going to bring to the A-League next season. I guess we're on the right path too, because we need to expand the league further. I mean, we need to get to 14, 16 teams as soon as possible.
What's more important to you, before I bounce over to Stolich for some questions, when you consider what should be a priority or priorities, should it be expansion? Should it be a national second division? Should it be getting the A-League in order? Should it be looking at the W-League and getting that to be a far more sustainable competition? Where do you think our priorities need to be directed at this point?
Lucy, I'll ask, why can't we have them all as a priority? Why can't we just, concentrate on all of them and get them all going at the same time, being a community, being a whole football community. And, as I said, all of them. I think they're all a priority, and I wouldn't single out one of them, to be honest.
Ray Theuma via Facebook. Good afternoon to you, Ray. I hope I'm pronouncing your last name correctly. Mr. Gatt, what did you think of David Gallup's reign? He wants to know.
I had a lot of hope for David Gallup very early on, to be honest. And I did have a bit of an advantage, because I knew David from his days of rugby league. I did cover a little bit of rugby league at the time, and he knew of me and I knew of him, and got on quite well with him early on. I thought he was terrific, but I think he dropped the ball halfway through, especially with the fan situation and the fact that the FFA didn't back, you know, support the fans in those bans. As I say, I think he lost his way in the end, and we certainly needed a change. Definitely needed a change, and it was good to get a football man in there like James Johnson.
Stolich, over to you.
Yeah, Ray, obviously a long time in the game. I wanted to know, what are the mistakes that we keep making that you've seen made, you know, year after year, decade after decade, that we're not learning from, that in order for us to progress as a kind of football nation, we need to learn from?
I think the biggest one is we don't fully understand fan engagement or dealing with the football community. I think that's the main one. We've seen that now with, what happened with the bands and the fans, the Western Sydney fans, and the dumbing down of the support, the fan bases, like the RBB. For me, that's probably the biggest one. I mean, I can go back to 1973. We made the World Cup final, and we all thought that Australian soccer was going to boom. This is it. We're going to take over, the sporting landscape in Australia. Didn't happen because we were too naive. We thought we didn't have to do anything. The ASF at the time, as it was called, and under Sir Arthur George, just thought, this is easy. Making the World Cup does our job for us, but it didn't. We needed much more. We needed marketing. We needed more money into the game. It didn't happen. Then look what happened. The game just degenerated again. So I think the problem is we don't learn from our mistakes. That's the biggest issue for me.
So going forward, when you start to consider, I already asked you what some of the priorities should be, but when it comes to the A-League particularly, and that's of course why we get together on these Thursday shows, there have been a lot of discussions around the competition potentially restarting again in about December. When I caught up with Greg O'Rourke, he said, potentially coming up to Christmas, that's when we could see the new season resume. But we're having a look now at the fact that the Fox Sports broadcast has been significantly reduced from 57 million to 32 million now. We're talking about the salary cap. I've seen an agent come out, and there was a story that Vince Rigari wrote, John Grimaud, basically saying that we should scrap the salary cap and the floor as well. Where does your mind rest when it comes to a few of the issues concerning the A-League for next season?
Yeah, I saw that story from Vince and John Grimaud, and I've got a lot of time for John Grimaud. I think he's one of the best thinkers in the game, and, we probably should take a bit more notice of him, to be honest. All very interesting points. Salary cap, look, I've been one to think that we need to keep it because, it does level out the competition. As we've seen over the years, we've had a lot of different winners of the A-League, which is great, and that helps sustain the interest of the fans. But I'm probably starting to think now that maybe we do need to get rid of it and the floor as well and open it up and see where we go. That's my feelings. And I think, importantly, the A-League needs to expand very quickly as well to, as I said earlier, 14, 16 teams in second division, promotion, relegation.
Will it do much for the competition, expanding it? I mean, because we all put our eggs in this expansion basket thinking that it would resuscitate the competition or rescue it to an extent. But, we've seen Western United come in, and unfortunately they haven't given us the uplift that we've all been looking for. Are we anticipating that we'll get that once MacArthur come in or once subsequent teams come into the competition, or are we missing something else, Gaddy?
No, I think we'll see a bit of an uplift with MacArthur because, as I said, I think they'll be able to attract a really good fan base. But, look, importantly, we've got to get the new expansion teams in the right areas. Maybe another team from up in Queensland, maybe another team in Adelaide, and another team in Perth, just to get some real derbies in there. Although I get, the big issue for me is we have too many derbies. But with extra teams, you're also going to have an even competition, aren't you? So you're only going to be playing each other two times and not three times. So we certainly need expansion in that regard.
Stolich, your views on potentially abolishing the salary cap in addition to the floor? potentially?
I mean, it's risky. You know, it's risky for some of those players who are on close to minimum wage already. You know, you're demanding a lot of young footballers to be professional, to give up so much of their life. Often they have to, you know, move interstate to different places they're not familiar with. So, but maybe it's naturally part of the evolution of this game because people have been calling for it for a while. We've had the salary cap in, and I'm not sure how much it's helped us. You know, we talk about the equalization benefits of it, and, you know, on one hand, we've had many different A-League champions, but on the other hand, you know, for the last 3 or 4 years, Sydney have been top and Mariners have been bottom. Sorry, Gaddy.
Yeah.
but, you know...
Nick, in terms of the salary cap, what I would like to see, you can keep the salary cap, but pay your visa players outside of the salary cap. I think that might work. That would allow more money to filter through to the younger players and whatever, and you can pay, you know, your whatever amount of visa players you have, 3, 4, or 5, you pay them outside of the cap.
But let's think about it in realistic terms now, and I'm talking short term, because coming into this next season, you know, if we're going to have a significantly reduced salary cap, if they choose not to abolish it entirely, how are we going to be able to attract, you know, visa players, foreign players who, with all due respect to many of the past players that have come to the A-League, have probably expected it to be a bit of an easy ride, and they've come here on a big pay packet and chewed up much of the cap, when, to be honest, I'd prefer to see that money distributed across younger players for them to be given an opportunity. But can you see a lot of visa players coming out in the next season, Gaddy?
Yeah, that's a tough one, isn't it, Lucy? But we've got to take into account too the situation overseas. I mean, they're all affected by COVID as well, and what's going to happen with their leagues and the salary money situation over there. So, you know, maybe they want to come to Australia for the, yeah, it's a safe place, yeah. COVID hasn't really hit us that hard, and you know, it's good lifestyle, so maybe we could sell that to the visa players. But yeah, it could be an issue. It could really be an issue, especially keeping some of our more talented players here as well.
I'll tell you what has been a really big issue over the last couple of days, and it's going to affect you more than anybody on this panel here today, Gaddy, and any Mariners fans tuning in. It's the news, yes, that Mike Charlesworth, after, you know, what's been a tumultuous spell for this club for a number of years now, has decided to put it up for sale and hand back his licence. The question that we're posing to all of the fans tuning in is, what's going to happen next? Can a community ownership model work? But, Gaddy, I want to, before we address those questions, I want to get your initial reaction. Because, you know, it's been such a horrible thing to see this club reduced to tatters effectively over the years when you consider the success that they experienced under Graham Arnold and to an extent also Laurie McKenna. You know, it's just been woeful. But how did you react to the news?
Yeah, Lucy, let me preface my remarks by saying, look, I know there's a lot of anger out there towards Mike Charlesworth, and a lot of Mariners fans are happy that he's now going to hand back the licence. I can see their point and I sort of agree with them. But, you know, without Mike Charlesworth, the club could have died in 2012, 2013. He saved the club from extinction. And he's had a tough battle trying to compete. He's the sole owner and, you know, he does not, and while he's fairly well off, he's not as well off as, you know, the people who own Sydney FC or the City Football Group or the Melbourne Victory. So, you know, he's had to do it virtually on his own. But, yeah, to be fair, he's also allowed the club to, you know, slip badly over the last few seasons. And, look, I think this is a good thing that's happening. Hopefully they'll have a buyer soon. Hopefully that buyer is someone who understands the Central Coast community, understands the people and the families there and what the region's all about and what a club like the Mariners means to them. It's, I think that's vitally important, and it's also important that whoever takes over is not allowed to relocate the club, because that would be an absolute disaster.
I think one of the issues that I've had before I bounce over you on this subject, when I started to really delve into Mike Charlesworth and his involvement, of course, we know him to be the managing director of Mediatel, a massive communications company in the UK. When he did come here to Australia, he'd had big ambitions. Of course, he wanted to start to look at where he could invest property-wise. So he established the Centre of Excellence. And, I mean, Gaddy, I'm sure you've been out there.
It's great. It's brilliant. It's very, very good.
is it really brilliant? What's great about it? What is actually great about it? Players don't have their own gym. They've only effectively got one floor of these offices that are being rented out and leased out to other businesses. They're sharing a public pool. They can't even use the pitches there because, you know, they're not wanting to pump money into it. So I want to know what is so excellent about this Centre of Excellence. It's not as if it's a training hub designed entirely for the players and the coaching staff. That's the problem that I have, number one, first and foremost. Second to that, he was going on and on and on about wanting to create this entertainment centre around the stadium, around Gosford Stadium, which we all love. I think it's probably one of the best stadiums in the country for football to both watch at and a lot of the players will say to play on. But then when he started trying to push that through the council and the council knocked it back, he said, oh, okay, well, I'm getting very frustrated. I can't create what I've wanted to here. So when he didn't have the opportunity to pump the money into real estate, why didn't he then start pumping the money into the football club? Why continue to spend the bare minimum of the cap consistently for years and watch this football club die and make the coaches of that football club the scapegoats for their lack of success? That's my biggest issue, is that he didn't give the players and the staff the best opportunity to succeed, and he hid his intentions for real estate by buying a football club. That's my issue.
You're probably spot on, Lucy, and probably well said. Look, I do understand the frustrations he's had with the council. I mean, you know, they wanted to take over the full-time lease of the stadium. I did see some plans that they had for the stadium, and they looked fantastic, really looked fantastic. If they'd gone ahead, well, you know, it could have changed a lot of things. But, yeah, look, that Centre of Excellence, I've seen it. It looks okay to me, but, yeah, I don't know what it's been like over the last 12 months or so maybe things have changed there. But, yeah, look, I can understand where you're coming from, and yeah, maybe and that's why it's probably best that now he gets out, and someone else is given a chance to see what they can do with the club.
And I mean, look, I know that a lot of people say, and you've said it there yourself, and I'm sorry, I'm very passionate about the subject because I just think it's a disgrace what's happened there. And ultimately, we're in a scenario where a lot of people have said that, okay, he came in and he rescued the club and all these sorts of things. But I think, well, what if there had been another owner that had actually come along at the same time and wanted to particularly invest in the football club? You know, it could have also been saved by them. I think ever since Charlesworth took over, the club's been on life support, and it's always been operating on the bare minimum. Stolich, anything else to add to this discussion and your views on Charlesworth handing back the license?
Well, I mean, yeah, like you guys are saying, it could have been handled better. But, you know, like Ray was saying, that the club needed money at the time when he first came in. But my kind of concern now is what happens after, and what do we do now? Because I feel like if we're reliant on, you know, often foreign owners coming in, we've had a lot of problems with owners. We've had problems with owners at Brisbane Roar. We've had problems with owners at Newcastle Jets. Obviously, we had problems at Gold Coast back in the day. So sometimes I worry with these, you know, owners who just come in and out, and they put their money in for a bit, and then whether they have business issues away from the football club and that kind of hurts them and they can no longer invest in the club, or, you know, they just get bored of it, or they get frustrated with it, or it isn't what they thought it was going to be. You know, it seems an issue. So what I would like to know is, from you, Gaddy, if you think a kind of community ownership model could work. You know, we talk about in Germany, they have the 50+1 model, where fans own 50% of the club through membership fees. You know, it was kind of floating around on social media this week when the news broke. I wanted to know your thoughts, whether you think it can work generally in the A-League and then specifically at the Mariners.
Yeah, look, I think it can work specifically at the Mariners. I'd certainly be interested in, you know, putting a little bit of money into it or whatever. But
me too.
Yeah, yeah. Look, the issue is the region is, you know, it's full of families, and a lot of them are doing it tough, whether they can afford, you know, what would be $1,000 or whatever a season into the club. That's a tough one. You know, I think they've got 7,000 members. So, as someone wrote, I think Philip Micklef on the World Game wrote, you know, 5,000 of them invested, you know, $750 or $1,000. Well, that'd be a significant amount of money. But, you know, whether that can happen or not, I don't know. I'd love to see it happen. It'd be an interesting development. Only time will tell. Look, I think the Mariners will head down a new owner's path, and, you know, maybe that owner might look at it as well. Who knows?
With respect to that new ownership, Cyrus Stolich, we're hearing some rumours coming out of several states across the country. I know that ACT have been bandied about. I know that Lynchy yesterday, not Lynchy Senior, but his son, Joe Lynch, who joined us on our program, said that somewhere up in Queensland has been floated to potentially take over the licence, which would effectively see the club, as we know it, the Mariners, disbanded. How would you feel about something like that?
I don't think it should happen. Under no circumstances should the Mariners be relocated. In all honesty, it just doesn't make any sense to me, to be honest. And I'm talking, you know, because I'm a season ticket holder. I have been for 6, 7 years, 8 years now. And you know, to take that away from that community, you've got to go there. I know people say they don't get fans or whatever, you know, and it's small crowds. But you look at the crowds there. Made up a hell of a lot of families, you know, they've got 2, 3 kids, and you know, that's the lifeblood. You know, you want to give something to them to be able to look forward to go and watch a game of A-League, you know, on one of the best stadiums, you know, in the country. So, you know, it would just make no sense if a new owner came in and relocated. And I would hope that the FFA or the new independent A-League, whoever's in charge at the time, doesn't allow it to happen. It can't happen.
Stolich, views on that?
I totally agree with you there, Gaddy, because I think it stuffs up so many things. A, you alienate the Mariners fans, you know, the 7,000 members, but also kind of, you know, your extra 4,000 or 5,000 people would consider themselves fans, but not necessarily members. They're alienated. I think the Central Coast, you know, it's 300,000 people there. With good community engagement, that team can grow, and I think crowds can grow there. And we've seen that, you know, they averaged 10,000 a few years ago when they were doing quite well. So there is a community there. Yep. I think also there's history there. You know, we talk about the Mariners have been in 3 grand finals. They've won a championship. You can't just get rid of a team like this. I think it would be, and also if I'm a fan of, you know, let's say they move it to Wollongong or Canberra or Queensland, like we were saying, I want my own team. I don't want the team that's come from the Central Coast. I would feel bad for the Central Coast, but I just don't like that as a thing. So I think it would be a terrible mistake. I think the Mariners needs to stay in the Central Coast, and if these new teams want to come in, then they can come through expansion or promotion and relegation.
100%, Nick. Give them a good owner, give them a good team, and they will come out. I promise you, they will come out. In decent numbers. I mean, you know, you're not going to get 15,000 or whatever there, but you'll get just 10,000, you know, and that's a viable proposition. But give them a good team to support.
Yeah, and it's a good football region as well. You know, there's plenty of Socceroos who've come out of, you know, not only the Central Coast Mariners team, but also that Central Coast region. And I think you need to always give them a pathway, those junior players in that area. I mean, what message do you send to those junior players if you take the team away from them? So I really, really hope that the Mariners, A, survive. I'd love to see this community model that is being floated about, whether that's, you know, obviously 50% owned by the fans, 50% private investors, or even local council could get involved. Even I'm not a Mariners fan, but I'd love to kind of contribute to that because I just think it'd be an exciting development. And, you know, let us know in the comments if you would also like to see that happen. But, yeah, I think it's very important that the Mariners don't leave the Central Coast.
Well, one of the things I think that has been suggested is that if a new team or a new owner wants to come in effectively, that it would no longer be known as the Mariners. They would absorb that license and create a team of their own. That's something that I've certainly heard. That would definitely be very worrying to you, Gaddy, to consider that the whole club could collapse entirely.
Yeah, it would. Yeah, but as I said to you, Lucy, it'd be a disaster. And it'd hurt the region, in all honesty. Yeah. I would just hope that, you know, maybe the Central Coast Council can get involved, maybe the Central Coast Leagues Club, and the fans can all get together. But you can't allow the Mariners to die. Simple. Can't allow it to happen. I mean, you know, if you get promotion and relegation, they get relegated. Well, that's football. You know, do it the proper way, but not like that.
Can the FFA afford to be in a situation, though, where, let's say, for example, if they do have investors coming to the table that are saying we want to take on the license and we want to develop our own team elsewhere across the country, can they afford to start bargaining? Because one thing that I have heard is that if the club were to relocate and if they were to create their own license or to even just relocate it in general, is that that FFA would demand 50% of the fee. So that would be a significant, I guess, you know, it wouldn't be something that would be appealing to something like a Mike Charlesworth. You'd have to imagine if he was only going to get that license for you. You'd imagine that he'd get rid of that immediately. But, you know, from FFA's perspective, you know, they're on the cusp of insolvency themselves, you know, and now knowing that the broadcast revenue will be significantly reduced for the coming season, you know, they can't afford to have to take on a club. So could they be forced into a desperate situation here, Ray? And, you know, in addition to other clubs across the league, you know, that the Jets are in trouble. Adelaide have reported in, you know, a world of hurt as well. We've also heard rumblings coming out of Perth with Sage trying to flog the club off, you know, some time ago to a guy running a Bitcoin company. You know, can they really afford to pick and choose what they do here?
No, look, it's a tough one from the FFA, and you're right, you know, that they are struggling big time financially, but, you know, that money's going down the drain there. Look, I don't know what the answer is, Lucy. Yeah, I really don't know what the answer is. I hope there are sensible minds around and get their heads around the whole situation and get us back on the right track and, you know, and make sure that the Mariners stay in the A-League. That's all I'm worried about, to be honest. That's the main thing that concerns me, because I know what the people of the Central Coast are like. You know, I've been going there for 30 years and I'm almost living there now. So I know what the community is like, and I know that they deserve an A-League club.
Oh, they're beautiful people. I mean, I lived out there for a year, and that's why I feel so passionately about it, because I just know how much they love their football club and how dismayed they've been to see how things have played out. Before we move on to the next subject, Ray, I mean, I'd love to hear from you, your views on why the club has been such a shambles over the years. Is it the players? Is it the coaches? Is it the lack of investment? Is it all of it? I mean, from your perspective, what's been your biggest gripe?
Lucy, the lack of investment, honest, obviously, is the big one. You need decent players, and, you know, and they've gone from coach to coach and, you know, player to player, and, you know, they seem to go for the, you know, bargain basement players. Yeah, we also need a couple of decent overseas visa players, just players that can attract the fans, do some footballers. Look, I like Milan Djuric. I think he's a quality player, but look, it looks like he's going to leave the club. You can't afford to lose someone like him. Ziggy Gordon's been terrific for the club, but, you know, as I say, it's been totally a money issue, and tried to run it on a shoestring and, you know, and cut their losses. They keep cutting and cutting and cutting. And once you cut so much, there's nothing left, is there? You don't have a club anymore if you're going to keep cutting. So money is the issue. And as I said to you, Mike Charlesworth is not as cashed up as some of the other big owners. So I felt sorry for him in that regard. But, you know, he's also made a hell of a lot of mistakes and hasn't carried out on the promises he's made.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's breeze through, pardon me, some of the A-League results that we've seen in recent days, Stolich. Namely, we want to talk about that Perth game against the Wanderers as well. Of course, we had Kilkenny on the show earlier on today. And for those of you that may have missed it, of course, you can catch it on demand again. But the question that we have, and we'll ask, I'll ask you first, Stolich, as well, before we do the rounds with our comments and Gaddy, but did Perth and Popper prove their point after defeating the Wanderers 3-1?
Yeah, I think they did. You know, it's important sometimes when you have a result like they did against Adelaide where they lost 5-3. Yeah, sometimes your reaction can be as important as the initial result, because, you know, that could have really, you know, like Ray was saying, there was question marks over Perth. Can they create enough chances without Castro? And, you know, they've shown at least going forward, that's not their problem. They've scored 6 goals in the last 2 games. So I think it's interesting. And I think that as long as Perth are there in the finals, they get a potential banana skin for, you know, City and Sydney and Wellington above them, because they have the experience with Popper, but they've also got, you know, players like Kilkenny, Fornaroli, Franjic, you know, experienced players who know how to do it. And then exciting young players coming through like Dane Ingham as well. So, and Nick D'Agostino, who we talked about. So, yeah, I think it was an important win for Perth, and, you know, question marks as well over the Wanderers. You know, they had an opportunity with this restart to kind of really push for the top 6, and I feel like they just haven't performed very well.
Yeah, I agree with you about Perth, Nick. I'd hate to be facing them in the finals, because they're a side that can, yeah, on their day they'll beat anyone, and they'll give you a good hiding as well. So, and, you know, Pop is such an astute coach, and he's going to have them primed for those finals. So, yeah. And in terms of the Wanderers, yeah, it's a it's been a tough season for them, hasn't it? You know, they lost their coach, Marcus Babbel, sacked him. JP's come in and done a pretty good job, to be honest, under the circumstances. But, you know, injuries haven't helped them as well. And, you know, just lacking a little bit of something, I think, in the midfield. They're going to do it tough to make the finals. Funnily enough, they're going to have to hope for Sydney to beat Adelaide tonight, which is a funny scenario, because if Adelaide win, then Wanderers have no hope of making the finals mathematically.
Can you see them cracking the finals, though, Gaddy? I mean, I think the JP's walked into a really tough situation here because this is a squad that he's obviously inherited, you know, with his predecessor, Marcus Babbel, putting together this team by the bye. But I just think that, you know, he's had to come in, he's had to try and galvanise this football club to try and basically start to strive for bigger things, because we know them to be such a success. But it seems like something is distinctly lacking at the Wanderers at the moment. And do you think that it lies with the players, or is there something bigger at play here?
Look, that's a tough one. Look, I'm a little bit biased here. As you know, I spent 8 months there helping them out media-wise. And, you know, I watched the players work, and they really worked hard. Their work ethic is fantastic, and they're a good bunch of guys. And, you know, the sort of club, I think, you know, we know what anything can happen in the finals. If they make the finals, you know, they're capable of clicking. Got some decent players. Mitchell Duke can score goals. Yeah, Perman Swegler is absolutely top class player. Simon Cox, we know his qualities. And yeah, they're a team that could cause some damage if they make the finals. But yeah, they've been very disappointing over the last 3 or 4 seasons, haven't they? We've expected so much more from that club in terms of results. I know that they continue to work hard to try and get that club back up to where it belongs. And, you know, as I say, if they make the finals, they could cause an upset. Maybe not make the grand final, but could cause an upset early on.
I can't see them making the final, Stolich, can you?
No chance. They won't make the finals this year. They just don't have enough games and stuff to get in. One thing I think has been disappointing for me from the Wanderers is there's so many great young talents coming out of their academy, but we're not quite seeing them really kind of star for the Wanderers and get, you know, regular game time. We're often seeing them go elsewhere. You know, you look at Ruiz Diaz, who played really well for the Mariners Monday night against Victory. He was in the Wanderers Academy like 2 years ago or something. So,
and Sam, you know, Silvera.
Yeah, exactly. So and I think Remy Nanjarine as well was down with the Wanderers as well, and then moved to City. So there's a lot of talent in that area. And I just think the Wanderers, one of the best ways they can, you know, return to their successful ways and really engage the fans is really start giving some of these young players opportunities, build a nice core of these good, really talented, your best talented young players coming out of Western Sydney, and, you know, really make the most of that, and then sell them on to Europe and then make the money from that. That's what I would like to see from the Wanderers.
Yeah, they have to get that mix right, Nick, with between experience and blooding their youth, because, as you say, their youth system is outstanding. I say full credit to the guys like, you know, Ian Crook, doing a fantastic job there. They're rich in talent there. They've just got to give them a chance. They're champing at the bit to get their chance, those kids. And I've seen how hard they work as well. So, yeah, get that mix right and they're on the right track.
Michael Long writing in, one of our regular viewers across both of our Wednesday and Thursday shows. He has been asking this question repeatedly. Finally, Michael Long, we're going to give you a chance to ask Gaddy this one. Hi, Lucy and Nick. Could you please ask Ray if he had the chance to try Luis Garcia's sangria?
No, unfortunately, but I did have the chance to interview him, and he's a fantastic guy. Lovely, lovely guy. And, unfortunately, no. I do like his sangria too, so, Maybe next time he comes out. Red. Red's got to be red.
It's got to be red, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
it's got to be red.
There's a good Spanish restaurant at the entrance that makes a nice sangria, so, yep.
Yeah. I should have taken your word on that back when I was living there, because I couldn't find a decent restaurant to save my life up at the coast. No disrespect, but, gee, it was rough. It was rough.
Careful, Lucy.
You've got to go in the right places.
I think it's a great town, and they could do so much more with the restaurants and the cafe scene. Don't you reckon, Gaddy? If they had someone invest down in Terrigal especially, that whole scene could be just beautiful. There aren't enough good places to eat.
There's your problem, Lucy. You should go down to the entrance and Long Jetty. Long Jetty's full of cafes, great cafes, yeah. and the entrance is full of good restaurants too.
All right. When I go back that way, I'll make sure I hit up the entrance. And we want to reflect on this game purely because we also want to discuss Adelaide. And, I mean, Perth's result against them was less than flattering, but absolutely belted by the Reds. A fantastic performance by Adelaide. I mean, I guess the question that we're asking the fans and we'll pose to you, Gaddy, is what went wrong for Perth at that time? But more so in the respect of Adelaide, can you see them making the six? And, my gosh, the stream of talent, of young talent that Reds team have coming through at the moment. It is so impressive. We talk about the Wanderers producing players, but I tell you what, the Reds in the country by far for me are the best at it at the moment.
Yeah, how good is it, Lucy, just to watch that Adelaide team play and those young players. And you know what? I'm going to give full marks to Carl Viet. He has done so well. And, knowing Carl from his playing days and talking to him, I absolutely never thought that coaching would be on his radar. But, yeah, he's done a fantastic job and he's obviously learned very well under, having played under the legendary Zoran Matic, who is one of the greatest coaches we've ever had and great guy as well. So, it's just fantastic to see Adelaide play this sort of football and for Carl to be giving these young guys their chance.
Can they make the six, Stolich? Can you see the Reds actually staying alive within the top six? Because as it stands... They've got Newcastle Jets on 31 points. I mean, Adelaide United are on 34. But, you know, it's all going to depend on sort of how they perform in their next couple of games, because for Adelaide, they've got Sydney and Melbourne City.
Yeah, huge game tonight. If they can do the business against Sydney, then they're a good chance. But, you know, we'll have to see. I don't know. It's a very, very interesting one, but I think they might have just left their run a little too late because, of course, you know, Western United do have the games in hand. But that's not to say if they do miss out that Carl Viet shouldn't be appointed on a permanent basis. I think, you know, what you were saying was right, Gaddy. He's done fantastically well. So, you know, I would like to see him... doing well, and you know, I'd like to see more of these young players coming through at Adelaide because I think it's been fantastic.
The point is that Nick, Adelaide always do well when they have a local coach, an Adelaide boy in charge. So with Zoran Matic, I'm seeing it with Carl. So
and Aurelio Vidmar back in the day.
Aurelio Vidmar, absolutely.
Yeah, no, I think we can all agree they've done fabulous things with their youth team, and I do wish them the best because I'd love to see how they'll compete come the final series against these bigger names. It'll be interesting to see how they fare, but particularly keeping our eyes on tonight's game against Sydney and then their next match against City. Of course, Western United, they do have the games in hand. They've got four remaining against the Wanderers, Perth, Sydney and City. So it's not exactly an easy run for them, but you'd have to imagine that if they weren't able to make the six, it'd be a bit of a catastrophe as well, wouldn't it, Gaddy? With all those games in hand,
absolutely. It's going to be interesting to see how they handle the next couple of weeks. Look, they've done a good job, to be honest. So, it'll be a huge achievement if they can make it.
Okay, what about the match between Melbourne City and Sydney FC? City walking away winners 2-0. I thought it was a fantastic performance from them, but quite the opposite for Sydney FC. It was really lackluster. I think their last two performances have been really disappointing, and it's something that Stevie Corica, I'm sure, will be desperate to fix now coming up to the final series because they want the boys on a high. They're a very resilient team, this Sky Blues side, very structured, very disciplined. But in this match, it was all about Melbourne City. And the question that we're posing to everybody is, does City have what it takes to be the A-League champion, Gaddy? Your view on that?
Yeah, absolutely. They've got quality all over the park. Yeah, I think that the thing with City is that they came to this game really fresh. So they look really good. Uncharacteristically, the Sydney made a couple of bad defensive mistakes and they were punished badly. It's been interesting to see how they've come back since the break. They haven't been impressive at all. But look, I'm sure Stevie Corrick is going to get them back on the right track. Too good a side. I think mentally maybe they've switched off after they, clinched the Premier's plate. But, it'll be interesting to see how they go against Adelaide tonight. I think that's going to be the real indicator of just where Sydney are at the moment.
Let's move on to the next fixture, Solich, if you wouldn't mind. I'd love to discuss with you the Jets' result against Western United, but more so in the respect that we've got news coming out now that a Jets fan has tested positive for COVID-19. New South Wales Health, of course, have posted out various messages saying that if you did attend the game and that you were at a particular pub prior to the match, and we'll give you the name for that, to be wary of any symptoms or to certainly get tested if you're concerned about it and to self-isolate immediately. It's pretty scary stuff because, of course, all of this COVID-19 stuff is continuing to dominate headlines every day. But now when you're hearing that someone has tested positive, it brings it home, doesn't it, Solich?
Yeah, it's a huge concern. And, you know, you have to wonder, does it put into threat having crowds at the A-League at all? But, you know, I would say, obviously, it's very important that everyone watching this, you know, if you're a fan of the Jets, get in touch with anyone who was at the game just in case they haven't seen it. You know, make sure that they are getting tested or especially if they're showing any symptoms. It's very concerning. Of course, there was a junior player as well in the Jets Academy who also tested positive. I believe it is connected. But yeah, the name of that pub is the Hopsmith Sports Bar, West New Lambton. So if you're there before the game on Sunday, you need to immediately self-isolate and seek testing. So because the person who tested positive was a man in his 20s, he was at that pub before. Obviously, pubs are a bit worse because they're inside, in close spaces. And then, yeah, if you're at the game as well, there's 2,500 people there. So it is a worry. We're kind of at a tipping point in New South Wales, I think, and we need to be very careful how we proceed.
Yeah, I think the important part here is that, the Jets' precautions at the ground were pretty good from what I understand. I mean, you know, they're very COVID aware and precautions were taken. So, you know, they had social distancing, fans were separated by two or three rows, and there was only 2,500 people there, so, and it's a big stadium. I think it fills about 20,000. So, you know, with a bit of luck, touch wood, you know, we'll be fine.
Jets, their chances, ultimately, when you consider how their return to the competition has been, they had to win almost every game to keep their finals hopes alive, Gaddy, but is it a bridge too far now?
Yeah, absolutely. Unfortunately, because they've done very well, haven't they? And I'm very impressed again with Carl Robinson and what he's done with this group of players. It's just a shame that there are some off the field issues there that could affect the club in a not too distant future. But yeah, they've done very well, the Jets. And full credit to the players and full credit to Carl Robinson.
A question about Western United. Mike Long, once again, once the Amunti went off, Western didn't look like scoring or creating any chances. And that's the biggest problem that I have with Western United is that they are quite reliant on the Amunti. But the problem is that they're so inconsistent too, aren't they, Stolich? Is that you just don't know what kind of a Western United you're going to get on any given day.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting. I feel like when they score early, they really kick on and they do well and the confidence is there and everything's kind of flowing nicely. You know, we saw it against Victory. We saw it when they smashed Adelaide, when they smashed the Mariners. But, yeah, it does feel like there's a bit of tension in the squad. You know, internally, they've had some issues. We know that players have left and all that type of thing. And you do feel that when things go wrong, they seem to get a bit anxious. I don't know. It's hard to read from the outside, but it's definitely something that Rudes needs to address because that's something that you need to kind of deal with, especially when you get to this end of the season. But, you know, on a positive note, I've got to say, I think this restart, the race for the six has actually been really exciting. So many teams in, you know, Jets were involved, Wanderers were involved. You got Adelaide, Western United. You know, there was a chance that Brisbane and Perth could fall out. And with games every night, I think it's been really nice to have a exciting finals. It's not what I kind of prefer. I like the system of, you know, first past the post is the champion. But if we are going to have a final system, it is good that, you know, especially because the title race was decided quite early, that we are having a bit of drama in the season. And, you know, well done to all involved.
Couldn't agree more. Let's take a match between Wellington and Brisbane Roar. It finished a stalemate, 1-1. They had to share the spoils there. But the question they were asking is Jamie Young the best keeper in the league? It's a controversial one because I'm a big fan of Paul Izzo. I think that Redmayne over at Sydney FC is also fantastic. You know, Liam Reddy as well, who still has so much to give, even at his age and all of his experience that he's amassed is an impressive one. But, Gaddy, the question to you, is Jamie Young the best keeper in the league?
Well, at the moment, on last night's performance, he certainly is. He's unbelievable. But how blessed are we with terms of all the goalkeepers we had this season? So you mentioned Liam Reddy is a personal favourite of mine, great bloke too. But yeah, let's not forget Daniel Lopar, what he was doing with the Wanderers early in the season. He was absolutely tremendous. You know, and you got Curto, you got Marinovic. It's fantastic to see the quality of goalkeepers we have at the moment. You know, but yeah, on what Jamie displayed the other night, yeah, he probably is the best on form anyway.
A-League memes, always good to have your company across our Wednesday and Thursday shows. And, you know, just love the spice that you add to the program. If I found my missus in bed with Jamie Young, I'd ask him if he wants a cup of tea.
Why am I not surprised that they would post something like that?
Just a cup of tea, not a beer or anything else. I just wonder how long that invitation would last for as well, for as long as Jamie Young's in good form, I imagine. Stolich, your view on Wellington, you know, we've heard from Coach Ofukale as well. I did the chat with him the other week. You know, I think they're just flying so high and they've been incredible to watch under him this season. You know, I had big doubts on how they would perform post the Marco Rudan era because I didn't know that somebody else could go that extra gear, but Ofukale has.
Yeah, they've been fantastic, and it's important for them because they, you know, we talk about the Mariners being under threat. They were under threat of kind of being expelled from the competition at one stage. So the fact that they're performing on the pitch has been great. I think they've been a credit to the league this year, you know, and a credit to the league in terms of bringing through young players. So that's been very exciting. Will they have enough kind of in the finals? I think they're just kind of one step ahead. A bit behind maybe City and Sydney, and but you know, yeah, they're a fun team to watch, and if Jamie Young hadn't been so good last night, I'm sure they would have got the win.
Well, yeah. They've got outstanding players that we've seen come through Wellington Phoenix, and one of them, of course, that will be of no surprise to anyone is the great Sarpreet Singh. And I say the great because he's kicking it about over in Germany in the Bundesliga with Bayern. You know, he gets to see Robert Lewandowski scoring absolute pearlers in training every other day. It's outstanding, his achievement, really, when you consider what's happened here. So you had the chance to catch up with him as well and have a chat. And what did you talk about?
Yeah, it was really good actually to talk to Sarpreet. He talked many things, and the full interview is on our website, and there'll be an article coming out shortly. He even talked about how Lewandowski has kind of taken him under his wing, and when he played his first game against Werder, Lewandowski said in the warm up, "Don't worry, when you come on, I'll go over to your side and help you." So he was, you know, he was playing out wide on the left, and Lewandowski was always there to support him and stuff. So it's great that someone of his caliber is helping someone like Singh. But I asked him in an interview yesterday whether he thought any A-League players could make that step up from the A-League to Europe like he has done, and this was his answer.
Yeah, hi, Sarpreet. Nick Stoll here from SBS Australia. I just wanted to know, you played it in a very talented team last year in Wellington with a lot of good young players. Is there anyone from that team that you think could also make the step up to Europe? Obviously, you've made the step up and you know what it takes to go to Europe. Is there anyone like there, maybe Kakache, you know, you played with Burgess as well. He's having a good season in Australia. Any of your ex-teammates you think could make that step up?
I think there's a lot of good players in the A-League, and especially younger players now, and I think a lot of them are getting their chances from how I've been keeping track back home. And yeah, for me, definitely Libby, Kakachi. I think he's bound to get a move somewhere after the season he's had. So yeah, I hope for him, because it's good if you want to play football at the highest level, you have to be in Europe. It's as simple as that. And the quicker, I guess, you can make the step, but make sure it's the right one, I think, yeah, it's definitely going to go well for him. And he's definitely capable of, I guess, his potential's like very high. So it's definitely possible. But there's also other boys, Callum McCowell, for example, I think, you know, he's been coming on doing well recently. And I think, yeah, for sure, everyone, I think there's a lot of young boys that can cut it in Europe for sure. But at the same time, it's not so easy. It's cutthroat, you know, and you have to be strong to survive. Otherwise, nothing's handed to you and you're in a completely different environment. Maybe you don't speak the language of the country and your family's not with you. you know, it takes a lot mentally, but I think in football, the strongest one survives. So, yeah, I definitely think the A-League's a perfect platform for young players to play and then make the step up to Europe for sure.
Well, it's certainly been the perfect platform for Sarpreet Singh, and great to see. Obviously, our congratulations are extended to him on what he's achieved so far, because it's just huge that he signed with a club like Bayern. But another question that you also asked Tim Stolich was about who would be the favourites between the All Whites and the Socceroos, and this is what he had to say on that subject.
Hi, Sarpreet. I just wanted to ask, obviously, traditionally, Australia and New Zealand are great rivals on the sporting field. New Zealand, you know, you're among a kind of young generation of players that are coming up and really exciting prospects for New Zealand. Where would you, and Australia's maybe regressing a little bit at the moment, where would you see kind of the, you know, the All Whites v. the Socceroos right now? If they were to play a match, would you consider yourselves favourites, or you know, where would the balance be?
100% we're favourites, but look, I mean, like you said, there's a lot of good players coming out of both countries, but I think... Yeah, definitely out of New Zealand, the way I look at it, the boys are getting more minutes and they're playing at a good level. And even when you do look at some of the Australian boys, but you have Dane Ingham, for example, who's Kiwi, so he's doing really well as well. But no, I'm really excited about what's happening with our national team. You know, I think it's a really exciting time, and with all the players that are coming through and making their marks, you know, I really think we can... we can show the way and show how we want to play football in New Zealand. And yeah, I mean, feel free to organize a game against us and then we'll be there. So, and then we'll see what happens. But yeah, I mean, I'm really happy with what's happening in New Zealand for sure.
Confident young lad, isn't he, Gaddy? How about that? Already seeing himself as a favourite against Australia.
Wouldn't it be good to, you know, resurrect Australia v New Zealand test series or something? I mean, I reckon it would be a great series, yeah. The Kiwis have got some fantastic players. Kakache just impressed me so much. He's just such a brilliant young player. Unfortunately, he's going to be lost to the A-League, isn't he, by the end of this season, I would think. But, you know, they've got so many good players. What about someone like Chris Wood, who just scores goals over in the EPL? So I reckon it'd be a fantastic contest, and I reckon it'd be a big crowd puller as well.
Yeah, it certainly would. Couldn't agree more. And well done getting to chat to Sarpreet Singh there, Stolich. Nice work. Always good to touch base with A-League players doing well abroad. And by far, you'd have to say that no one's doing better than Sarpreet, given that he is with Bayern Munich as it stands. Of course, we have our own Aussies scattered around the Premier League as well. But, you know, it's incredible that he's at a club like Bayern. So we wish him all the very best with the club. As we look to wrap up the show, I want to talk about this. We'll end on your beloved Mariners, Gaddy, in there. Yeah. Emphatic result for their final game of the season. It was a real thriller, this contest between both them and the victory. 3-2, the final score. The question that we're posing, though, is Ruiz Diaz the real deal? And we talk about outstanding youngsters. He's just been fabulous, but I wish we could have seen more of him throughout the season. Gaddy?
Yeah, he is the real deal. After what he did the other night, two very, very well taken goals. He's got a lot of up, this kid. I think he's going places, and, you know, hopefully next season he'll get much, much more game time. I'd love to see him, starting games, because he's got a lot of improvement left in him, and he's certainly an exciting prospect, and it was great to see.
What was your overall view of the game? I mean, it was an important one for the Mariners, obviously, not because they were playing for anything other than pride in some respect to try and end the season on a positive note, but how did you see the performance overall?
Oh, terrific. Look, I think their form since the break has been great. They're a bit stiff not to get all the points against the Wanderers as well. You know, the Wanderers scored in the last minutes to seal a draw. But, look, I think Alan Stadgis has done a pretty good job under the circumstances and, you know, of the season. And, their form since they've been back is great. Gives you a little bit of hope for next season. Obviously, we've got to wait and see what happens with the ownership deal, but they played some very good football against, admittedly, a victory side that's, you know, got a lot of issues at the moment, but you can only beat what's in front of you, and they got the job done, and it was great to see.
How about the great Michael Zapponi joining us via Twitter? Zappers, how are you, mate? I tell you what, for those of you watching, for any of you that know of Zappas, you'll understand this fully when I say that he's one of the nicest blokes doing the rounds in the Australian football community. Such a top bloke. He's done a fantastic job with Fox Sports over the years. The only shame is that we can't see more of him. Of course, he's down in Melbourne. Zappas, greetings to you, and we hope that you and your family are doing well down there, mate. And he's written in and said, of course, Gaddy thinks that Ruiz Diaz is the real deal. Mariner through and through. I agree, though. He did very well. Let's talk about the victory, though, because for me, they've probably been the greatest disappointment of this season overall, Stolich. And it sort of, with the benefit of hindsight, doesn't come as that much of a surprise when you consider that they really failed to secure any decent signings to build up a strong and a competitive enough team to really compete this season. They've lost the likes of Ola Toivonen. They lost a whole host of their big-name stars once Kevin Muscat left. We've talked about the debacles that have surrounded the coach signings and whether or not he was the appropriate coach to take up the post at such a big club like the Victory, Michael Kurtz, that is. But, your view of their season and how they pick themselves up going forward?
It's been a disaster. And, I echo your sentiments around Zappas, and good to see him tuning in. We'll have to get his thoughts on the Victory in one of the upcoming shows. They've been an absolute disaster, Victory, this year. And it's a shame because, we always talk about them. They should be the biggest team in the country or one of the biggest teams in the country. And whether it was Kurtz's appointment or, even their recruiting, they've had issues with injuries, whether it be injuries to Rojas, injuries to Robbie Cruz, of course. Naboo had issues. So, they've struggled with their recruitment. Luck as well hasn't played well for them. The young players coming through, we haven't seen as many as we'd hoped. So it's been a disaster. How do they get it back? Well, first of all, they have to get this coaching appointment right. I think they'd be looking at Ufuk Talay a lot. I think he would be a good appointment. They've got to get their recruitment right. And as we've been talking, I don't know how many foreigners you're going to be able to get now because of a reduction in the salary cap. So maybe you start having to look at kind of the junior ranks in Victoria and making sure that Melbourne City aren't the only club kind of picking up all those good young players. So, it'd be interesting to see how they go. But, yeah, very, very disappointing season from the Victory this year.
Ray, good afternoon to you again, Ray. Before we jump over to you, Gaddy, what is going on with the Victory head coach position? They'd apparently chosen their man, but negotiations apparently fell through, which is correct. That's what we're hearing that came out of the media reports from Greece. But where do they go to next, Gaddy? We know that Ufuk Talay is someone that has been linked with the club. When I spoke to Ufuk, he said, I'm just focusing on this season and then we'll worry about that later on down the track. And then, of course, John Aloisi too. I know that his name has been bandied about as well. Sorry, I'm just getting some text message once again.
This is the Victory coach messaging you.
Is that you, Ufuk Talay? I personally think, Gaddy, that it should be Ufuk Talay. I know that Wellington Phoenix fans will be very upset with me saying that, but I think he's certainly earned his stripes and deserves a gig at a big club like that. But what are your views?
Yeah, I'm sure I saw something from Ufi the other day saying that he was committed to Phoenix. We know what the contracts are worth these days. They're worth nothing, aren't they? So, he would be an ideal fit for for Victory. I'm very impressed with Ufi, what he's done with Phoenix. Lost those first four games of the season. We all thought, he's going to be in a bit of trouble here, but he's got them together playing some great football, and now they're in the finals. But, it's a situation Victory have got to get right. The next appointment is coach, and they've got to give him time to develop to there as well, because, Victory should never, ever be out of the top two or three of the A-League. The resources they've got, and the club culture, that they are a top two team every season, you would think. So vitally important they get this next appointment right. And if it's Ufi Talay, then they're probably on the right track. But I think it's got to be a local, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I think the next coach has to be local, someone who mm-hmm. understands the A-League, understands mm-hmm. the Victory culture as well.
Mm-hmm. Warren Horn, leave Knicks' coach alone. We have been burnt by it all done. Yeah, the poor Knicks fans, they continue to give these Australian coaches chances and great opportunities, mind you, for these first-time A-League coaches. And they go on, they create some success or they do really well, and then, of course, they skip across the pond once again. So, Warren, we'll make sure that we pass that message on to Ufuk Talay and everyone there. Stolich, as we look to wrap up, final comments.
Well, I just say it's not only, the Knicks, Postecoglou left Brisbane and all the success he had there to go to – Victory. So Victory is just a massive club. And, you know, I think that's always going to be the way in football. When a big offer comes, you know, you've got to strike while the iron's hot. You know, if he loses five games in a row and suddenly everyone goes, ah, no, no, we don't want him. We want someone else. So, you know, but I think Ray's right. Definitely go for a local because, you know, as we've said before, there's just so many things that is unique about the A-League. And we see the success of a lot of local coaches.
And we love how unique the A-League is. Come on, guys. I've been saying for a few weeks now, we've been hard on it for a long time, haven't we, Gaddy? But it's time to start bringing the love back to the game because, you know, it's our only elite competition that we have. And it's a perfect opportunity to end on this note. You know, and you know, why should we start to give the A-League some love again?
We need to. And as I'll get back to the point I made earlier, we need to get together as a football community. You know, let's stop the backbiting. Let's forget about the egos and the self-interest and, you know, let's pull together as a football community and get this game moving and, you know, make sure the A-League is, you know, the competition, the good competition that it should be.
No, I couldn't agree more. Ray Gatt, you are legendary for several reasons, notwithstanding your 47-year career in the job that was journalism. Of course, it's such a full-on occupation to be a part of. So hats off to you for the incredible career that you did have. It was a real delight for you to be able to join us here on the World Game A-League Show. We'd love to have you back down the track as we look towards the final series, which is right around the corner. We're glad that you're enjoying your retirement after all that time in the business. You certainly deserve it. You're a top bloke. And even when we do disagree, as I said before, you're still all class and an absolute gentleman. So thank you so much for your time, Gaddy. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Lucy. Thanks, Nick. Very kind words. And I promise you I won't disagree with you anymore. Not too often anyway. Not as often as you think. Not as often as you think.
I want to disagree with you. As long as it's constructive, because we all love to have a debate within the game. And that's why we love connecting with the fans every Wednesday and Thursday here. Thursdays, of course, are our A-League specific show. And Wednesdays, we talk about the broader world game narratives doing the round. So make sure you join myself and Nick and a special guest star from 1 p.m. next Wednesday. We also actually have a surprise and outstanding guest that's joining us, don't we, Stolich? It's going to be the great Andy Bernal.
Yeah, we're looking forward to having Andy on the show next Wednesday. If you don't know Andy, he was a former Socceroo. He went and played in Spain, one of the first Australians, I think the first Australian to play in Spain. And, of course, he's also known because he was David Beckham's kind of right-hand man in Madrid when Beckham made the move from Manchester United to Real Madrid in 2003. So plenty of stories from Andy, and we're really looking forward to hearing his thoughts on everything that's happening in Australian football.
He's written a great book from what I believe.
We're hearing some rumblings. It's going to be quite the spicy one. So we're looking forward to getting our hands on a copy of that. And, of course, every Thursday, as you are joining us here today from 1:30 Australian Eastern Standard Time, you can come and chat with myself, Nick, and a series of special guests on our A-League dedicated program. But that is it from us for now, guys. It's been a bumper show. A pleasure to have your company. For all of the stories, of course, that we have discussed, you can head to the World Game website to get all the latest news, opinion pieces and updates from the A-League and beyond, of course. We are covering the World Game here, even though it is coming up to hiatus time, and we do have the Champions League coming back, so we've still got plenty more to look forward to next week. On behalf of myself, Stolich, Ray Gatt, and the entire team at the World Game, though, it's goodbye for now, and we'll see you again next week. Take care.